Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I think character issues do count, and I think all of your record, personal as well as political record, is there for the public to look at. I would not say it's a disqualifier. I wouldn't go that far. I think people make mistakes, and you are held accountable to those mistakes, and the public will listen to the circumstances and make their decision. But certainly it's a fact.
This is Rick Santorum Saturday night. Let me tell you, I watched the debate Saturday night. And the feeling I got was any one of the Republican candidates, any one of them, would be a safer bet for the presidency than the communist we have in the White House. Let me start with that. For the incompetent Marxist we have in the White House, I'd take any one of them. Let's start with that. I felt good about them. And I don't usually listen to the debates. I find them, frankly, boring. Not one question was asked that I would have asked if I had been the moderator. There was not one question from that sanctimonious, phony Stephanopoulos. Not one question from that oily-faced woman, whatever her name is, who has no credibility whatsoever. I've forgotten her name from ABC News. She's irrelevant. The question is this. How come they didn't ask one question about the flow of illegal aliens into the United States of America? How do the Republicans permit themselves to be snookered like this over and over and over again by one oily left winger after another? And so I opened the show today in the Savage Nation with this question. Which questions would you have asked or would you ask the Republican candidates for the presidency? Okay. Here are a few for you to consider. If I, Michael Savage, were running a debate and I had them in front of me, I wouldn't play the game that Stephanopoulos played or that oily-faced woman played. I would have asked these questions. One, number one, not if, not when, but how. How would you stop the flow of millions of illegal aliens into the United States of America? Now, you notice the question itself, of course, is inherent with the answer. It's not if you would, but how you would. You didn't hear that from the two stooges, did you? No. Number two, when would you start hearings into Nancy Pelosi's insider trading as Speaker of the House? That's number two. Number three, to the Republican candidates, how, not if, how would you stop Iran from using the stealth drone that was delivered to them intact? Number four, would you conduct hearings? When would you conduct hearings into the individual in the Defense Department who delivered the drone to the Iranians intact? Number five, all you candidates, all your Republican candidates, this is the fifth one. When would you start hearings? When would you start hearings on the deaths of the Navy SEALs in that helicopter incident where all of them were put into one slow-moving Chinook helicopter and flown into a fire zone? A fire zone that resulted in the deaths of more SEALs in one action than in the whole history of the Navy SEALs. How come we didn't hear those questions? Shall I continue? I've given you five questions, any one of which is a valid question for the Republicans who claim to be conservatives, who are the opposite to Obama, and yet not one of these questions was asked by these two stooges from ABC News. So I'm asking you again, how would you stop the flow of illegals? Would you start hearings into Pelosi's financial dealings while Speaker of the House? How would you stop Iran from using the stealth drone? Would you start hearings on the deaths of the Navy SEALs and when? Now here's another one, if that's not enough for you on the Savage Nation. When would you begin impeachment hearings against Eric Holder for the death of the Border Patrol agent? When, not if. When would you begin the impeachment hearings? Next, when would you begin the impeachment hearings on on Miss Napolitano of the Department of Homeland and Security for her breaches of contract with the American people? Number one, two, and three. You want to hear the breaches? I'll give you another example. Not only is Napolitano permitting the flow of contraband and illegal aliens into the United States of America, but she refuses to use all of the powers of the police that she has under her thumb to arrest the Occupy movements, which are closing down the ports across the West Coast. Just today, this morning, in Oakland, California, a group of this rabble, this communist rabble, blocked truckers who were trying to enter the port of Oakland, California, interfering with international commerce, interfering with domestic commerce, interfering with the movement of goods, interfering with the free movement of truckers, interfering with the free movement of ships, and Department of Homeland Security did absolutely nothing, Jack. Zilch. Nada. Nothing. When would you impeach Janet Napolitano? How soon after taking office would you impeach her? So I've given you six or seven questions that should have been asked and should be asked of these Republican candidates, and I'll tell you something else, if you're listening, if I got your attention. They don't need a moderator to ask these questions, to bring them up and answer them. If any one of them had the brains that I pray to God that they have, and I'm sure some of them do, the next time one of these olenacious liberal so-called moderators try to set them up by attack each other, all they're going to do is smile and say, how come you didn't ask me about how I would stop the flow of illegal aliens into America? I don't care what Stephanopoulos would answer. I tell him to shut his pie hole. I simply say, you're nothing but a talking head. Shut up. I'm running for the presidency. And the American people are sick of the millions of illegal aliens who are running across America's landscape. And here's what I will do. Why don't you see a debate then? What do you think would happen in this country? That person would go right to the head of the class. They become the president of the United States. If one of them said to that stooge, Stephanopoulos, you know what? I'm not interested in talking about Rick Perry. I'm not interested in attacking another Republican because any one of us up here would be a better president than Obama. I'm going to answer this question. I'm going to start hearings on the deaths of the Navy SEALs, and I'm going to get to the bottom of the person in the Department of Defense who permitted this to happen. And when we find him or her, we're going to try them for homicide. What do you think that would do? I mean, there are so many questions that need to be asked that are not being asked. It's making me ill. I can't even watch these shows anymore because it seems as though I'm living in the ex-Soviet Union. I feel as though I'm watching a debate set up by the government itself. I feel as though it's the government media complex at its worst. And for the Republicans to play into this is frankly not only disheartening, it is more than disheartening. It's very depressing. So if you have a question that you would pose to the Republicans, if you were moderator, or put it another way, let's say it was a savage nation debate, so to speak, and I were the moderator, and I'm asking you for questions to ask of the Republican candidates. You certainly know that the olenacious Diane Sawyer looked like she was on some kind of, I mean, she looked like she was out of it. Let's put it to you that way. We don't know what she was on. But she went out of her way to be not only sanctimonious, but obsequious at the same time. And now if there's a word that combines obsequiousness and sanctimoniousness, other than saccharine, which is the only word that comes to mind, I would say Diane Sawyer was saccharine. And that, of course, is no longer a word that anyone knows because saccharine is no longer used. So I would say that Diane Sawyer was like NutraSweet. Maybe that would express to you what I thought of her. It was nauseating. And then to see that twerp, Stephanopoulos, I didn't even know the man was still in practice. I thought he had been disbarred 10 years ago. I thought they disbarred him and threw him out of the media years ago, and he was working somewhere in Omaha on a local high school station or teaching high school broadcasting. And there the Republicans were, standing there again, all respectful to these two nobodies, answering questions that were, frankly, set up only to have them attack each other. And that's the heartbreaking part. So big deal. So Romney said $10,000 about it. It was an expression of speech. And look what the lowlifes in the media have chosen to jump upon. It just shows you how low this country's media landscape has become, that these dim-witted 10-watt bulbs have nothing better to talk about other than Romney said, I'll bet you $10,000. Now, is that the most significant thing to have come out of the debate? Of course not. Ron Paul looked like a genius to me. I never cared much for Ron Paul, but I found myself cheering the man. The man in his own bumbling, old grandfatherly way made immense sense when he talked about controlling the Federal Reserve, controlling the federal government, reining in spending. I loved listening to him. And I said, God, it would be great and refreshing to have a Truman-esque man like Ron Paul as vice president in the White House. Vice president. And so none of this came out. Instead, we're supposed to believe that the biggest thing that happened was Romney said this and Gingrich said that and Santorum didn't say this. Even Bachman, who I've lost all respect for over the months that I've seen her, looked brilliant to me. Michelle Bachman. She didn't break a jumping jacks record like Michelle Obama did. But then again, she doesn't understand what's important in the country. I mean, Michelle Obama knows what's important, which is to get into a jumping jacks contest with school children. But Michelle Bachman looked like presidential material to me. She was brilliant. She was targeted. She was on track. If I have any advice to the Republicans from here on in, stop attacking each other. Stop attacking each other. Stop attacking each other and focus on the real enemy of the future of America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're sitting through the most, a lead up to the most significant election in my lifetime, maybe in the history of America, because we have a naked Marxist in the White House. America has seen what Marxism actually looks like in its mild form, mind you. These are the first few years of a stealth Marxist presidency, in my estimation, as I've pointed out in immense detail in my best-selling book, Trickle Up Poverty. Don't just think I'm throwing out hot air. Just remember that I'm an educated man, a highly educated man, and I've been studying this business for a long time. As far as I can tell, any European of any level of education would understand that Obama is a communist, Marxist, whatever you want to say. And yet, you have these olenacious talkers like Stephanopoulos and Sawyer who say, why, some are even accusing him of being a Marxist. Oh, he's not a Marxist. Would they even understand what I'm saying? Do they have any idea what they're dealing with here? I doubt it. They're so wed into their own rhetoric, they don't even understand what they're talking about. I'm an outsider. I'm not an insider. I'm not part of K Street. I'm part of my street. I'm part of Main Street. I'm not on K Street. And let me tell you something else. I see things more clearly than any one of these empty suits in the media. And here's what I have to say. They're all falling for the trap, one after the other. They're attacking each other, and they're answering questions that should never be answered. Instead, they should turn it around on these liberals and say, wait a minute. You're asking me an inane question. I want to answer this question, and I'm going to answer it. Why don't you ask me how I'd stop the flow of millions of illegal aliens into America? Because here's what I intend to do. Why don't you ask me how I'm going to start hearings onto the insider trading inside the inside Congress? Because we're going to do that the day we become the president. Why don't you ask me about the hearings I'm going to hold on who in the Air Force may have sent Iran the stealth drone on a silver platter since it arrived there undamaged? Why don't you ask me when I'm going to start hearings on the deaths of the Navy SEALs who were sent into harm's way and they all died because they were sent in a slow helicopter into a fire zone? And when we get to the bottom of it, whoever in the DOD called that shot is going to go to jail, or they're going to go to jail, or we're going to try them for treason. You want me to go down the list? What would you ask if you were advising a moderator such as myself in this most important of elections? Because I don't hear any of the real questions coming out. Rarely do I hear a question that makes me feel as though I'm listening to a significant debate. It all seems to be set up by these individuals, these saccharine left-wingers who are setting them up to attack each other, which I've said over and over and over. So let's take the callers now from the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, New York, WOR. Joe, welcome. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Well, Dr. Savage, what I basically would ask all these candidates, basically, is all about sanctuary cities like my so humble...
Wait, hold on, stop. What would you ask them? Just please state the question.
I would say basically enforce the law, go after the employees that hire them, and also...
Hold on. I didn't ask you your opinion. You have to pose it as a question to the candidates. So please restate your statement. You are now the moderator of a presidential debate. How would you ask the question? What would you say to them?
I would say, how would you control the flow of illegal aliens, other OTMs, everyone that comes in this country, and how would you basically go after them as far as checking employment and basically...
All right, fine. So it's my question. How would you stop the flow of illegal aliens? I mean, that's my question. Thank you for repeating it. I appreciate it. Kansas City, John, what would be your question to the candidates?
Dr. Savage, my question would be, how and when are you going to go after China and bring them in line to a matter that represents the United States' interest as opposed to...
Well, I would be more pointed on that and say, would you impose tariffs on China-made goods? And what would the percentage be? If I were a moderator, I wouldn't say, how would you? I'd be too general. I would say, what percent tariff would you impose on China-made goods? Not even if. What percent? Then you'd see some action. Then you'd see the real conservatives come out and the real fakers come out, the real K Street operatives, because the K Street operatives are against tariffs. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. See, the K Street operatives who get money before they're a candidate and then get money after they're a candidate to work for various and sundry interests are in the pocket of China, and they would say, oh, no, I believe in free trade. We can't have tariffs. That's utter rubbish because there are tariffs on U.S. goods across the globe. Are you aware of that?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah. America is the stupidest nation on earth for one reason. It's not that the people are stupid. It's that we have the most degenerate class of politicians of any Western nation. Every one of them is bought and sold for from morning until night by lobbyists. So therefore, if China has most of the money in the world, they can buy the best lobbyists the world can provide. That would include former secretaries of state. That would include former presidential candidates like Bob Dole. That would include former national security advisors like Sandy Berger. So far as I know, the last I checked, they're all working for China as lobbyists. So they go to their friends on K Street and they say, listen, anytime talk comes up about putting up tariffs, you block it, and we'll make sure you get what you want. It's that simple. It's that clear. You know, maybe I watch too much television, but the fact of the matter is, sometimes life imitates art, or shall I say art imitates life. Maybe I've been watching too much of The Sopranos and too much of Boardwalk Empire. But let me tell you something. It reflects in my mind exactly what the political situation is in the United States of America today. Nucky has nothing on any of these individuals as far as I can tell. And I mean the individuals on the other side of the aisle. There's good news out there. Kagan sidelined. Kagan sidelined. Yay, team.
Savage.
Let's be candid. The only reason you didn't become a career politician is you lost to Teddy Kennedy in 1994.
Well, now wait a second.
Low blow, Newt.
You'll get another response.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Do I get to go ahead? Continue?
Please.
No, and I'm just saying, I looked at it, I thought, you know, I'm a citizen. I've served the country in many ways. You're a citizen. You served the country in many ways. But it's a bit much. You'd have been a 17-year career politician by now if you'd won.
And with regards to the idea that if I'd have beaten Ted Kennedy, I could have been a career politician, that's probably true. If I would have been able to get in the NFL like I hoped when I was a kid, well, I'd have been a football star all my life, too.
See, now that was the starring answer of the night. But the media instead picked up on the $10,000 bet because they hate Romney, because they know he's the only one who could possibly beat Obama. How many different ways do I have to say to you the whole thing is a fix, which is why the liberal media is in love with Gingrich. They know he can defeat Romney in the primaries. And if Gingrich defeats Romney in the primaries, it's the end of the election. Let me explain it to you in a different way in case you don't understand it. Gingrich is probably a decent man, as good as we're going to get, certainly better than Obama. Romney is too liberal for my taste, yes. But let me explain to you realpolitik in case you don't understand it. An election has little to do with what you want to happen and everything to do with what will happen. I want you to understand now, you have on the stage, come the next October, on the one side you have a good-looking young black man who America is familiar with. As bad as he's been as a president, the average person doesn't even know it. On the other hand, you have a fat old white man who looks like the typical corrupt Republican named Newt Gingrich. Let me ask you how many points by which Obama beats him. Is it 20 or 25? Now let's reverse that. There are other candidates who I would say might beat him. Actually, after seeing the debate Saturday night, truthfully, I think Santorum could beat Obama. Truthfully, I didn't know Santorum was that good. The man is really showing his guts and his true grit. And the man could possibly win, by the way. He was the governor of a state. And the man has guts and he's smart and he's a real conservative. And I wasn't a big supporter of Santorum. Bachman, tremendous conservative, could win in a debate against Obama. But it's a long shot. The one who could really beat Obama is central casting president for the role, and that's Romney. Romney is a 50% conservative, I get that, and a 50% liberal, which is probably all we're ever going to get today. Nevertheless, again, step back from your emotions. Try to be as calculating as you can be. On the one side of the stage, good-looking black man who the average idiot is familiar with, Barack Obama. On the other hand, really handsome, tall, friendly white man named Mitt Romney, who was a businessman, no less, who, although he isn't vicious, although he's not overly quick of tongue, he is very appealing in the sense that if you listen to how he responded to the glib Gingrich, saying with regards to the idea that if I'd beaten Ted Kennedy, I could have been a career politician, probably true. But if I'd gotten in the NFL like I'd hoped when I was a kid, why, I would have been a football star all my life. Brilliant answer. And a friendly answer, not a malicious answer, while Gingrich was the malicious one. Gingrich went for the man's entrails. He didn't look good. He doesn't look good. And he's not going to be a good candidate with regard to running against Obama, which is why I say to you, pay attention, pay close attention to what Georgie Boy Stephanopoulos and the other one did on the debate Saturday night. For example, I want you to listen to Georgie Boy Stephanopoulos in clip 18, raising the issue of marital fidelity, because, of course, it's a non sequitur. Listen.
Should voters consider marital fidelity when making their choices for president? And Governor Perry, in South Carolina this week, you said this is an important issue. Why?
Well,
let's stop. Now, Stephanopoulos would know nothing about marital fidelity, which is strange that he even asked the question. But he's doing that only to attack rather than to ask a serious question. If the man was worth his medal, he would have said, should voters consider insider trading by members of Congress when voting? I would say the Georgie boy would have done his job. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Sacramento, California, on the great KSTE radio out of 650, blasting its way like a flamethrower through the San Francisco Bay Area, cutting not only the fog, but the fog of liberalism. Joan in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, hello, Dr. Savage. I'm with you. I've been very frustrated that these Republican candidates have been attacking each other instead of asking specific questions, just as you said, on the illegals, which I would seal the borders, and the repealing the Obamacare, but also about the Canadian pipeline. And how fast are they not only going to sign up for that, but how about restarting oil drilling on our own soil?
Absolutely. In other words, I would have asked, when you are president, would you sign an executive order to make sure that the Keystone Pipeline is built as fast as possible to make us independent of Arab oil as quickly as possible? And when you're president, when would you give an executive order demanding that we start drilling in the Gulf of Mexico like 9 foreign nations are doing and have been doing? How in the world can the people be so blind as not to understand that while Obama blocks our oil drillers from drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, at least 9 other nations are drilling in our Gulf of Mexico in the international waters. Do you know that?
Including China, exactly.
China is drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. China is drilling in the Gulf of Mexico over 200 miles off our shores, and yet our president, who is so bought out by the so-called solar lobby, if you want to put it that way, the corrupt solar lobby at that, is doing everything he can to make certain that oil does not flow from our own shores. Amazing. Amazing. It's amazing how clear these things are when you reach a certain point of understanding. There are other questions that we can talk about on the Savage Nation. Let me go to my website and see what else may be of interest to you, because maybe you don't even care about the election. I don't know. It could be you don't care that much about it, and I... Where's the Christmas music? Could you play Sleigh Ride for me so they understand that there's more out there than this? There is more out there than this, and there's not anything more important. But just play Sleigh Ride while I'm looking for another story to pick up here. Superstar Savage skyrockets, Rush flatlines, internet radio raisings, Al Sharpton banks dough from bankrupt nonprofit. Well, of course, that's why he's on MSNBC. Who else would they hire but a stooge like him? Can you play Sleigh Ride already? How much can I ad-lib to it? It is Christmas on the Savage Nation, December 12th, only 13 shopping days until Christmas, And so for the sake of America, get out there and shop, or the Department of Homeland Security may become knocking at your door, inspecting you to see if you're a good enough American. There's a couple other stories that are so disgusting I can't even talk about them. Sexual predator targets Jewish Orthodox boys. He looks like a movie star, but members of Brooklyn's Jewish... Shall I read the rest of it, or is that too Jewish? Am I allowed to read that story? It's from the New York Post. This guy allegedly molested 117 kid victims and 85 arrests in Jewish enclave. He looks like a movie star, but many members of Brooklyn's Jewish community believe he is a monster. Andrew Goodman, 27, who worked for Jewish social service agencies, is charged with sexually abusing two Orthodox boys for years in Flatbush, and it goes on. Now, why am I making this a story? Well, I'll tell you why. One, because it's important. Two, because, you know, you keep hearing about the fear that Sharia law will be introduced into America. And as you know, we shouldn't have Sharia law because we are a nation of laws under the U.S. Constitution. But you should know two things. It's not always the Catholic priests. Other religions have this type of problem with molesters as well. And number two, what you may not know is that the Jews already have an equivalent of Sharia law amongst the Orthodox community, where, you're not going to believe this, there's actually a body of Torah sages, whatever they may be, that requires anyone alleging sex abuse by a fellow observant Jew to first report to its rabbis before they go to the police. Now, if that's not the equivalent of Sharia law, I'd like to know what is. And I'm totally opposed to this. How dare these throwback rabbis have the nerve to think that they should trump our laws when you and I both know that many of them decide to keep these kinds of cases among the Orthodox in order to make sure that it doesn't slip out into the general public. I'm sick of it. Molestation is molestation even if you're wearing a skull cap. I don't care if you're wearing a cross or a skull cap. If you're doing a thing like this, you're committing a crime against God. And if you're preying on little children under the name of God, you should be given a sentence far worse than if you were doing it without wearing a cross or a skull cap. How do you like that? So I got that out of my system. The fight against intimidation because of religious fanatics must continue in the United States of America. And if I have to lead it, I will. 1-800-449-8255. A little Christmas music again. I think the people got scared by that story because they didn't expect.
The weather outside is frightful.
Who's this?
But the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Man, it all right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm glad we had a 15-second intermission. Now, remember last Monday when it came up that the drone landed in Iran without so much as a damaged particle on it? And I raised two issues. One, was there a double agent inside the Air Force drone office who delivered this to the Iranians, number one, because of Obama's obsession with diversity and planting people inside sensitive positions across the political landscape? Is it possible that they inadvertently, or worse yet, on purpose, put a double agent inside the Air Force drone program who delivered this drone to Iran? And I said we should have an investigation on that immediately. Number two, I said, not being an engineer, but being a reasonably intelligent man, that now the Iranians can reverse engineer this drone because it's intact. So we had a guy call the show who said that he works with, if I remember correctly, said he works with robots, and he called me names on the show. He started saying, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about, they can't reverse engineer it, and then he hung up. But the fact of the matter is it came out today that I was 100% right. Once again, common sense and the ability to reason prevailed, and I predicted what happened today is Tehran claimed yesterday it can reverse engineer the downed U.S. drone. I don't think they were listening to my show to say a thing like that. The question is, how did Iran get this sophisticated U.S. drone, the stealthy RQ-170 Sentinel on December 4th, as it was flying in its airspace? They claim that their own Revolutionary Guard cyber warfare unit hacked the aircraft's flight controls. I don't believe that for 1 minute. I believe that somebody in our Air Force either shared the flight controls with a friend who sent it to the Iran's Revolutionary Guards, or delivered it like a model plane on a ball field. Yet there's been no investigation for anybody in Congress. How do you like that? And so, ladies and gentlemen, the main thing for you to understand is we're in grave danger with Obama in the White House. Once again, another terrible breach of national security. Once again, another phenomenal breakdown in our military. Over and over again, it's a shocker how these things go on. And, of course, the oily-faced Diane Sawyer did not ask one question about the drone that Iran got. Bronco Billy, whatever his name is, Georgie Boy, did not ask one question about national security. Instead, again, marital fidelity and nonsense like that that no one really cares about. Of course, they're an important issue, but not more important than national security or border security, in my estimation. So if you care to comment, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Speaker Gingrich caused something of a stir overnight in the Middle East with comments he made in an interview with the Jewish Channel in which he called the Palestinians an invented people. And I just wondered, Congressman...
Talker, you're just an invention of the establishment. Get him off my show. Those are not the questions that should have been asked. We had a lot of good questions that were not asked. We're talking about this. We're talking about the election. We're talking about the sex abuse suspects arrested over the last couple of years in Brooklyn, especially amongst the Orthodox Jewish community, and how, according to the DA in Brooklyn, this is a terribly important story. They claim that the DA Hines is soft on Orthodox child predators because there is strong pressure in the insular religious community to cover up such crimes, according to the New York Post. And this is an important story because the victims are children. And I believe that if we oppose Sharia law, which we certainly should as a secular nation, we must also oppose so-called Jewish law trumping our domestic law. Either it's good for the goose. In other words, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Either you have a nation of laws that follows the Constitution or you don't. And either you live in America or you don't live in America. And if you don't live in America, then go live in Israel. But don't tell me that your law should trump my Constitution, because you're doing pretty good with our law, aren't you? New York, WOR Max, welcome to the show.
Michael, how are you? Big fan over here. Just wanted to clear up one thing. As far as I know, one of the things you said where, you know, Sharia law, the Orthodox Jewish community, the rabbis, from my understanding, there's two camps among the Orthodox rabbis as far as going to the police. And they all agree that if you're the victim of any sort of sexual abuse, as the victim, you go straight to the police. You're obligated to go to the police. The only difference of opinion...
Wait. Hold on. That's one group. But according to the New York Post story on sexual crimes in the Orthodox Jewish community, I'm going to read you a paragraph. Agudath Israel of America, a prominent body of Torah sages, whatever that means, requires anyone alleging sex abuse by a fellow observant Jew to first report to its rabbis, who decide whether the case should go to secular authorities. That nauseates me.
Secondhand knowledge, meaning if you're the victim, even a good Yisrael agrees that you should go to the police. The only
Did you hear a word I said?
Absolutely.
Did you hear what I just read you or not? You keep repeating what you're saying. Did you hear what I said or not?
This is from the Post. This is as far as the Post. Now, I'm telling you, as far as I understand, I've read and I've heard radio shows. And
all right, so you're saying the New York Post is wrong.
They may have misunderstood the position of this organization, because this organization, if you're the victim, you go to the police. If you have secondhand knowledge, they just want to make...
What organization are you referring to? Let's be specific here. The New York Post story about sexual predators in the Orthodox community and the big scandal and the arrest of a guy who looks like a movie star who's been doing it for years, and he's hurting little boys who are victims inside a Jewish social service agency. On top of it all, these are poor kids. Some of them are orphans. It makes me sick to read a thing like this. And apparently he was sheltered by the it says he's one of an astounding 85 accused Orthodox child molesters that Brooklyn DA Charles Hines office says it has busted in the past 3 years. In an initiative called Cold Sadik, Hebrew for Voice of Justice, because there's been an outcry that there's a lot of cover-up like there was in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a big problem. And I think, you know, specifically with the Orthodox Jewish community, you know, one of the reasons, it has nothing to do with the Sharia law aspect, you know, the actual Torah law is that the law of the land you are in, you have to abide by. You can't play this nonsense game of, you know, our law will...
Well, I wish that were 100% true. Then you ought to contact Susan Edelman from the New York Post, who alleges that the opposite is true. She alleges that there is internal Jewish law that trumps the domestic laws or the secular laws, where they have to decide whether or not to report it to the police, which, if it's true, would be a violation of the law itself, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
So, you know, I think we all agree that anyone who commits such a crime is someone who should be punished, tried at least. Goodman went to Yeshiva playgrounds once, offering a reward for any boy who found his lost glasses. He also pressured young boys to recruit others, the rabbi said. He allegedly took one boy to Atlantic City for a weekend. He allegedly plied boys with liquor and pills and showed porn on his laptop. Goodman, a paralegal in a law office, worked weekends for Ohel, a prominent nonprofit that serves at-risk kids and disabled adults. So you hear who he's preying on? You hear who they're preying on? For 11 months, starting in June of 2009, he took a minimum wage job as a caregiver in a group home for physically and mentally disabled adults 18 and up. His tasks included helping residents go to the bathroom, change clothes, and shower. This is sickening if this has been covered up. It's sickening.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You were really talking about income inequality, yeah, which suggests the redistribution of wealth.
So I'm going to interrupt you there,
Steve. There are going to be people who say, this is the socialist Obama, and he's come out of the closet.
Look, everybody's concerned about inequality.
This is the class warfare you have been accused of by the Republicans.
The problem is, we can't have an honest conversation about the greatest income inequality since the 1920s, the irresponsibility that resulted in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, without somebody saying that somehow we're being divisive. No, we're being honest.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say...
Oh, they finally asked Lenin a real question. Lenin Jr. was asked the question. And right away he goes to ground. Yeah, right, income inequality. This is right out of the protocols of Karl Marx, what we're living through in America, the class warfare that Obama is living off, thriving on. Is he really thriving on it? Well, amongst the have-nots, yes. There's never been a better time for a war between the have-nots and the haves than right now in America, let's say ever since the Great Depression. And I would be all for cutting out the tax breaks that General Electric has, for example, cutting out the other finagling that companies like Microsoft use to avoid paying their fair share of taxes. What's amazing to me is that in all of this rhetoric about the unfair tax structure in America, they never talk about the corporations, which are all big donors to Obama, who are getting away with virtual thievery by not paying their fair share of taxes. I'd be very specific. Instead of being generic about income inequality, I would say, Mr. Obama, we're all for cutting out loopholes. Why don't you begin with General Electric, which took in over $5 billion in the U.S., according to our studies, and paid no taxes? Or your friend Bill Gates, who took in billions of dollars and they don't pay their fair share. I mean, this is what we're talking about. And that's what the debate is really about. Not hardworking individuals in this country who should not be punished for being exceptional. And let me make a point about that. I've been poor and I've been well off. Most of my life I was poor. I was born into a very poor family. I wouldn't say impoverished, but let's say lower middle class, if you want to even put it that. I wouldn't know how to grade it. Immigrant son, worked very hard, blah, blah, blah. You've heard the whole bull story. Now, everyone's poor. I love that question to the candidates. Everyone was poor. Even those who weren't poor knew someone was poor. When they weren't poor, they heard of someone who was poor. They once went to a shelter where they actually touched a poor person. And although they're currently multi-zillionaires, they allege that they know someone in their family or distant relatives who's a black sheep who they don't go near. He's poor. And they send them once in a while a postage stamp. And they send them a clock every once in a while. And they do know poor. They definitely understand how they started out in a railroad shack, a one roomer, and they worked their way up. And although now they're worth $300 million, don't confuse me with a rich man. Yes. Okay. So we all understand the malarkey. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to talk about income inequality in America today, let us talk about tax inequality in America today. Approximately 50% of Americans who earn money pay no taxes. Let's start with that. I would say tax the poor. I would say start by taxing the bottom 50% and make them pay their fair share before you start destroying the role models for America, who are the real rich as opposed to the filthy rich. Now, the filthy rich are corporations that pay no taxes. Corporations that pay no taxes are violating every idea of fair share. And we know who they are. We know some of them. I can list them for you. We know that GE pays no taxes, according to our studies. We know that Microsoft pays almost no taxes because of the way they juggle the books. And they say the money came in Ireland on the way in from Denmark and went through, was washed in Ireland and went through the Bahamas. And then it came back through France and it went into the Zurich. And from Zurich, it came over the pole, and although it came over, it missed Seattle. And because the money in being transferred from France to Zurich to the Bahamas, it whizzed over the pole. It didn't touch Seattle. At no moment did it ever land in Washington. Therefore, we owe you zilch. You can take a walk. We'll pay you nothing, but we'll all talk about income inequality. And we at Microsoft believe in diversity. And we're going to hire people who look like college campers. And we're going to do business with the communist Chinese as fast as we can. And again, pay you zilch on it. Are you kidding me? You think we're stupid? How do they get away with this? Well, Warren Buffett, for years he got away with acting like old Warren. Years. Oh, simple old man, lived in the same house, drove an old Buick. Yeah, right. He made all his money. He's such a genius. We saw he went to the White House, and the next day, after giving a speech that we should all pay more taxes, he got some kind of insider deal on a couple of stocks. You saw that. That's how it looked to me. Then the next day we find out, the next month, Warren Buffett, who lost his BS act pretty good and pretty fast, goes and buys the Des Moines Register, if I'm not mistaken, or a newspaper in his state. And people say, why would he buy a newspaper now? When he himself a year ago said, newspapers are a losing item. You can't make money on a newspaper. I would never invest in it. I give it a grade Z. And he goes and buys it. And they can't figure out in the same story why he bought a newspaper. He bought a newspaper to reinvent himself once again into the aw shucks guy with a crumply suit and an old Buick. That's how it works. That's how it works. It's all hogwash. The whole picture is upside down. And that brings us back to the Republican debates, where they are shooting themselves in the foot as a result of the oily people in the media. So let's go to that issue. We watched a debate Saturday night, and I frankly was impressed with Santorum, who I paid almost zero attention to before. I saw a gutsy young guy who really knew what he was talking about. Frankly, I'd sleep better at night with him as president. That's number one. Then I saw Bachman, who I wrote off many, many times for being too aggressive, too there, too out there, just too in your face. I can't explain it. Too cheery, too self-promoting. It was a number of things about it that turned me off. She's an intelligent woman with the right ideas. Ron Paul, who I dismissed as a total lunatic a while ago, a complete lunatic, looked rational to me Saturday night. I'd sleep better at night with him as president. He'd make a great vice president, I thought. What a refreshing thing would be to have him get up and give some speeches about the Federal Reserve and such over the next number of years. One after the other, they impressed me. But the worst part of it was that the questions that were asked were not poignant to the average American. And so I gave you a list of questions that I would ask, and I've asked you to call me with the questions that you would ask. Now, since I don't have them in front of me, I can't repeat them, but they were about things such as, What would you do to, when would you start cracking down on the illegal immigrants that are flooding into America? And then the next question to the Republican candidates would be, when do you intend to investigate insider trading amongst Congress? The next question would be, when do you intend to investigate the downing of the Chinook helicopter that led to the deaths of 21 Navy SEALs, 5 Army Rangers, who in the Defense Department called for them to fly in one helicopter into a fire zone? Is that individual going to be indicted and tried for homicide? I mean, there's a lot of questions that Americans who are not stupid, both inside the government, outside the government, inside the military, outside the military, I know are asking. Not one of them was asked at the conference, at the debate the other night. That's all. So I'm going to ask you, if you were, if you had the ability to ask the Republican candidates questions, what would they be? Now, I want to go to the issue for a moment of Newt versus Mitt. And at this point, I'm not taking sides, nor am I backing anybody. I want to be very clear about that. I just said to you, any one of them would be a good candidate. However, I believe that Newt's grandstanding and Newt's background indicates to me that he is in this for himself once again, to an extent that we've never seen, that we do not see amongst the other candidates. I think he does. He has his own interests at heart, not the interests of America. And the reason I say that is that because if Newt wins, Obama wins. If Newt wins, Obama wins. If Newt wins, Obama wins, period, end of story. Whereas if I would say any of the other candidates can defeat Obama, given Obama's abysmal record. And that's all there is to it. It's as simple as that. I don't think it's that complicated. And without getting derogatory about Newt Gingrich, who I'm sure is a horrible person, I mean, a nice, whatever he is, I don't know what he is. He's just another man out for himself like all of us at the end of the day. But I have no faith in him because of his past and his flip-flopping. In fact, this man made John Kerry's flip-flopping look like hiking boots. You can take that one to the bank. Gingrich's flip-flops on virtually every major issue, whether it be immigrants or you name it, his flip-flops make, what's his name, Kerry's flip-flops look like hiking boots, which is not bad. I like using American colloquialisms. They're fun. It's the kind of thing that you'd see in a movie or in a novel, you know. In fact, I should save it for the next edition of my novel. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the caller, Sacramento, California, KSTE. By the way, David, thank you for calling me from Sacramento, the heart of the monster. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, also known as Jack Hatfield, how you doing? I read your book yesterday, and I tell you what, brilliantly written. I just totally saw it. I listen to your radio show pretty religiously, and I can totally see you writing this book. The watch, the whole concept of the watch, Jack Hatfield's dad.
In other words, my character Hatfield looks like a bit of me.
Love the twist at the end. And you're Jack Hatfield. You are Jack Hatfield.
Well, first of all, I don't have Asperger's. Let me start with that. I do not have Asperger's. I do not sit in dark rooms and play with clocks when things get out of control. but Jack Hatfield does, because there are people who do need to do certain things in order to reset their minds. The fact is I like clocks and watches, but I'm not obsessed with them the way my character is. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
How did you, by the way, David, how did you get the book, Abuse of Power? Who gave it to you? You bought it or someone sent it to you?
You still there?
All right. I didn't hear it, but thanks for the call, and I couldn't hear. What did he say? Does anyone know? Couldn't hear him. That's all. All right. Let's go to another caller across the nation on the East Coast, where already it's late and dark and people are miserable and horrible and they hate their lives and they can't wait to get home and it's bitter. And there's nothing waiting for them but a rotten, and there's nothing to look forward to till the holidays. And then, God, there's nothing after New Year's all the way till Washington's birthday, which isn't even Washington anymore. And they don't know what to do with themselves. It's the holidays, ding-a-ling, and they don't have the money for presents, never mind the presidents. They're worried about presents, not president. They don't know what they're doing. They're driving on the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway. They're driving the LIE. They're driving on this highway and that highway. They can't wait not to get home, and yet they can't wait for the morning to leave so they can get out of the house because it's stifling and the walls are closing in. And if it wasn't for Prozac, they would have committed a horrible crime by now. Let's go to New York. Nate, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, with that introduction, I'm ready to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge.
So, I'm sorry. Come on, you know I like to play with things.
You bring light to my life every night when I drive home. I just want you to...
You mean even though I just gave you a kind of sarcastic view of the average commuter, it was funny, okay? And you enjoyed it a little bit.
I loved it. Listen, I'm an Orthodox Jew from New York. I also work for D.A. Hines. And I want you to know. Yeah, and I want you to know that it's a problem in the community. But the New York Post is not the first time, it's not the last time they'll get a story wrong. I think it was necessarily malicious.
All right, so let's clear the record. The New York Post claimed that the DA was, let's say, slow to act on accusations of molestation because the rabbinical board of sages chose to be the God Almighty of these cases before the police. Is that true or false?
Whether D.A. Hines was quick or slow, I can't talk to that. But I can tell you what the Torah says about molestation. I can tell you what the Torah says about...
I would love to hear it. Tell America what the Torah says about molesting children.
First, let me tell you what the Torah says about the authority of the nation that you live in, which is we're citizens of the United States. The Torah says, Dino de Malchus Adina. You can record those words. Anybody who knows anything about Orthodox Judaism or the Torah will tell you those three words, no variation of it, which is Dino de Malchus Adina. The law of the land is the law which by we abide, period.
Beautiful. All right. Now, that's very important for America to hear, because the allegation that a rabbinical court trumps the secular law was very alarming for those of us who fear Sharia law, because the Sharia promoters are liable to push the Jewish law as a model. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Savage.
There is a sense, a little sense of disappointment, that they thought that you were going to be bolder, that you were going to take more steps. That you were going to work outside the box, so to speak, be a little unconventional. And they think you've been too cautious, that you've just played it by the numbers.
That's opposed to my critics, who think I've been this radical socialist.
That's very good. I got to tell you, that he's a very, very skilled debater and probably far more intelligent than his critics give him credit for. Never underestimate Barack Obama's intelligence. I have told you he's perhaps one of the smartest men to have ever gotten into the White House. Don't underestimate him. And I don't understand how critics keep debasing him and putting him down. That's irrelevant. It's his policies that we're talking about, not him as a person. And that's the important thing to remember. It's the policy, stupid, not him as an individual. Now, of course, the individual's character matters, and that usually results in policies, no doubt about it. But as I keep repeating to you, this is the most important election in my life, maybe in the life of America, because if we are continuing down this road, it's over. We will not be in the model of a European socialist nation. We'll be in the model of something along the lines of Chavez's utopia in South America. Why do I say it? Because every day I wake up to another attempt to become a more controlling over our lives. I woke up this morning to a nightmare that he wants. Obama's minions are trying to create a kill switch for the internet. All it would take would be for someone to say that internet site is doing something this, that. The government could close you down and stop your advertisers from advertising on your website. Do you want a government to have that much power over you? Then go live in Syria. Now, you don't hear this coming up under a Republican administration. It's coming up under this radical socialist administration, which leads me back to Obama. He himself may not be as radical as his minions are. That's something you have to understand. That the man at the top may not even be as radical as he is accused of being, but it's the people around him who are more radical than he is accused of being. And you could mark that one down. When I come back, we'll go to the gentleman who was telling us about rabbinical courts in America.
Savage.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the one.
15 days until Christmas. You have 15 days to shop to boost the GDP. And if you don't, DHS may be visiting you and Granny to make certain that you're... Hey, let me ask you something. We're going to go back to that caller in a minute about Jewish law and how far it goes. It's a very interesting call for me anyway, because we all reject the inroads of Sharia law in America. It has no place in a secular society, as we can see, what it does in societies where it prevails, women are suppressed, and life becomes a 15th century life for most people. So therefore, we want to make certain that it doesn't really exist in any other religion. I want to go back to that in a minute, but I want to throw another question out, which is, well, maybe I confuse you by throwing it out. Am I wrong in saying this? Well, okay, it is the question I want to ask. On the West Coast today, the rabble, the vermin, the Occupy vermin, blocked the Port of Oakland. They blocked truck drivers from getting into the Port of Oakland. They stopped the free movement of goods, the free movement of trucks. They violated federal and international law. And Janet Napolitano's Office of Homeland Security, who was supposed to protect us internally from domestic and foreign enemies, did nothing. Am I wrong in suggesting that this was a case and has been a case from the beginning for the DHS? Should the DHS intervene and stop the Occupy movement from blocking the free movement of goods in this country? I know I'm right, and yet they're not doing it. Why? Because Obama owns the Occupy movement. Obama and his administration own the Occupy movement. How many different ways do I have to say it? Now, if you want to call on that, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And I have another question for you. Remember Cain? Remember how many people were enamored of him, and I was one of them? I loved the guy. Refreshing, so he was a little slow here and there, but, you know, I trusted him, right? Now, remember all of the Harridans who came out of the woodwork that were presented to us, that he did this to them, he did that to them, and they forced them out of the campaign, remember, with a little help from the vermin in the media? Here's a question. Where are they now? If all of them were so molested by Herman Cain, how come they haven't filed cases against them since they withdrew from the public eye? Where are all of these over-the-hill Harridans? Where have they gone? If there was one of them who was telling the truth, why wouldn't they sue him for damages? Let's go back to Nate in New York on WOR. Nate, you were telling us about the fact that in the religious Jewish community, there's a law that's supreme, which is the American law, right?
Correct.
And what is the Hebrew phrase? Please tell it to the people.
It's Dina de Mahusa Dina, which means meaning? Law of the land is the law.
Okay. And you wanted to tell us more about the molestation accusations in Brooklyn, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know anything about their truth or not. Unfortunately, I believe they're probably true, just like in any society, in any community that takes place, unfortunately. But there, in no way, shape, or form do the members of the community protect these people. And there may be certain rabbis who perhaps these people are their congregants and they seek to protect them. And to that extent, these rabbis should be ostracized and should be exposed.
All right. So you work for you claim you're an attorney who works for D.A. Hines?
Worked. I do not work there anymore. I did. If I was working there, I wouldn't call. I have worked there in the past.
Okay. All right. So the article is sexual predator targets Jewish Orthodox boys. And he himself was a very good looking 27-year-old Andrew Goodman, who was accused. This paragraph got my attention, and I want to read it to you again. Agudath Israel of America, a prominent body of Torah sages, requires anyone alleging sex abuse by a fellow observant Jew to first report to its rabbis, who decide whether the case should go to secular authorities. Is that false?
That's absolutely false.
That is false. So the writer of this article, whose name is Susan Edelman, they should demand a retraction. It gives the general public a terrible view of an insular community that hides its criminals.
Dr. Savage, you know what happens as soon as you demand a retraction, the story becomes even bigger. Unfortunately, so I don't know if that good Israel is going to go ahead and do that. But
all right, well, I take your word for it, and I'm glad to hear it, because if it was true that such a religious body existed that thought it was above secular law, then the Muslims would suddenly say, you see, the Jews do it, why can't we have Sharia law? You follow where I'm coming from?
I do, Dr. Savage. On a totally another note, I have a question for you, if I may.
Yeah.
I'm a student of yours. I listen to you every night. I discuss your shows with my brother. He lives on the West Coast. We drink up your words.
Oh.
There's one thing I can't figure out, and I hope you're not offended by me asking you this, but why do you care if they don't allow you in England? What have they contributed to the world, and what have you contributed to the world?
Why do I care that I have been banned from entering England?
Yeah,
because it's a blight upon my name under false accusations that were created by individuals in the U.S. government. in collusion with the British government in order to smear me, I believe, with money from Media Matters that was given to Media Matters by George Soros. It's a chain that was created in order to destroy me. Fortunately for me, it has not gone further than that, but it could have. And frankly, I feared that it would. That's number one. Number two, you of all people as an Orthodox Jew should know what it means to be banned from a nation. How could you even ask me that question? Didn't Hitler himself ban people from nations? It's a terrible precedent, especially for a secular democracy, to lie about a man like myself and to put him into a category with people who have actually murdered individuals. So that's number one. Number two, the British people are a wonderful people. They deserve better than Tony Blair. They deserve better than Gordon Brown. They deserve better than what they have now. Number three, the British people detest the government that they have. The British people are treated like infantile morons by an overbearing government that our government happens to be copying. Number four, and this is very important for you to understand. You ask, what did the British people give the world? Let's start with the Magna Carta. How could the land of the Magna Carta ban a man like me who doesn't even broadcast in England based upon words that were taken out of context and strung together by a group of leftist fanatics, both inside this government and the British government under Gordon Brown? These are important questions.
Well, I certainly understand that and appreciate that, but if you looked at what you've accomplished over the past, let's say 50 years, your adult life. And the fact that you were first, how many people listening to your show wish that England actually banned them for a non-terrorist, for a totally innocent act? That means you're somebody. If you're banned in England for doing nothing other than for rising to the top of your field, that means you're pretty darn accomplished.
You know, okay, maybe if I had you as a friend, I wouldn't feel this way, and I wouldn't have been as shocked and horrified by it, nor would I have been fighting them for 3 years now and still continue to fight them. Okay, I understand where you're coming from, and I know that in the big scheme of things, my original joke, when I first saw it on the Drudge Report that morning, I went on this show and I said I was shocked to read that I was banned from entering England. My first reaction was, I don't know if you heard the show, I said, darn, there goes the dental work I was planning on having in England. And the second feeling was, darn, there goes the culinary tour of England that I was looking forward to this summer. I mean, that was the Mark Twain response, you know what I'm saying? But then it started to sink into me that if they can ban me in England, what else might they do to an individual like me? And moreover, what might they do to other conservatives in the media who they want to shut up? You know what I'm saying?
Fair enough. I understand that. How many people in England are
listening? By the way, let me ask you, sir, are you aware that some Israeli generals are banned from entering England?
Of course, many of them are.
Many of them are, and yet they are great patriots like our George Washington. What does that tell you about England? They would ban an Israeli general who had the nerve to defend his nation, and they welcome murderers and terrorists and things like that? They have over 20,000 cases of so-called honor killings and honor crimes, rather, in England that they don't even prosecute, where Muslims beat up their daughters because they dare date someone who wasn't a Muslim. They call themselves an honorable nation.
Dr. Savage, a famous Jewish philosopher, once said, very recently, his name was Shlomo Kalbach. He was from San Francisco originally. You look him up online, Shlomo Kalbach once said, besides for America, Israel has no friends in the world.
Yeah, well, you know what happened now? You could add to that, besides for evangelicals in America and a few others, Israel has no friends in the world. Because America is not a friend of Israel anymore. You look at the average Democrat, they are Israel haters. And the only people who still help Israel and love Israel are the hard right conservatives and the evangelicals. They're the best friends the Jews ever had. And shame upon those liberal Jews who spit upon their help. That's what I can say. Shame upon those liberal Jews for spitting upon the Goyim. That's what they say. You think I don't hear it? It makes me sick.
Absolutely. 78% of Jews were Obama supporters, and hopefully that will change this election. Hopefully they've opened
it. It won't change. It'll get worse. It will get worse. It'll be 88% after this. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, okay. Yeah, well, at least the last caller said that I cheer him up on the way home in his commute. That's good to know. At least someone's happy. But it's a miserable time in America right now. I mean, December 12, 2011, unless you are the president of General Electric, or unless you are the CEO of Microsoft, who can get away with virtually anything you want to get away with, including building a super nuclear reactor for China, at the same time the Chinese government is telling its Navy to get ready for war. I mean, life is pretty terrible for the average American. Even those making money are miserable. Right now, even people who are doing well don't feel good. That's the strange part. This man is like cast a pall over the country. It's like a pallbearer. Him and Harry Reid are like pallbearers. Every time they speak, Americans have to reach for the Prozac. It's a shocker. Nancy Pelosi gets up there, they reach for the Prozac, and they hide under their cover. They don't know which way to turn. Chaz Napolitano comes out, and they run all together to the hills with their safety food. After Perry attack, Obama displays Christian faith. It was so cynical to use your children that way. It's a nice picture, actually, on Drudge Report. I don't know how Matt gets all these pictures, but they never look better, the first family. It certainly beats the tank tops eating popcorn in front of a ball game. I got to tell you, I feel like I'm living in America. It's a nice picture. There's the mom. There's the two nice-looking daughters. Dad's wearing an overcoat instead of a... They look very, very... She looks dignified. No more with the tank. Very nice. The last picture they published in the White House shocked me. It looked like the hillbillies took it over. I couldn't believe it. Popcorn and things on the floor and a television set that looked like from Brooklyn. I couldn't believe it. I was looking. I like it that Perry told him and then he went to the church. What did Perry say about the church that made the Obamas run to the church? Does anyone know what the... do we have that soundbite? After Perry attack, Obama displays Christian faith. You know, I would print this picture up. They look so great. President Barack Obama with First Lady Michelle and their daughter Sasha, Emily, right, walk from the White House in Washington to attend a Sunday service at nearby St. John's Church. Well, Jeremiah Wright wasn't holding court, was he? Is he still around? No. And they didn't have a guest pastor by the name of Herman Cain by any chance, did they? So why did he do this? Why did he... President Obama publicly attended church on Sunday and spoke about Christ's birth during a Christmas concert program that included Jennifer Hudson, the band, Perry, and Justin. Who is Justin Bieber? Why do I care about this twerp? Why is this twerp everywhere? What does he do? Did anyone even... But wait a minute. Why did he go to church? What was it that Perry said? Do we have the soundbite, guys? I'm groping again. Your job is to say, yes, we have... What do you mean? And what was she doing? I thought she was retired many years ago and was living somewhere with Janet... Her and Janet Reno opened a dude ranch somewhere. Was there any truth to that? Why was she even there? Why do we pay any attention to these left-wing hacks and their dumb questions? Georgie boy Stephanopoulos is suddenly a reliable source. He asks a question whether we should consider if voters should consider marital infidelity when voting, instead of asking this question, should voters consider insider trading when voting? I mean, that's the question he should have asked. I mean, well, how much longer do we have to put up with this? The day a Republican, and any one of them, as I say, would have been, every one of them looked good to me, and I was not a fan of half of them before this. Ron Paul, who I wrote off as a complete kook, looked good and intelligent. Charming. Charming. Wonderful vice presidential material. Michelle Bachmann, all of a sudden pointed, focused, no longer looked like she was selling vitamins or something like on a special, you know, like if you buy one, get 10 free. On Tuesday only, you buy one, you get 10 free, and then you return the money, and we double your money back. And you don't understand how they make a living, but that's the kind of business they're in. I never saw anything like it. There's a clothing store in the San Francisco area now running a sale. Tuesday only, you buy the first suit, and you get the second suit for half price, and then we throw in the third suit for free. How do they survive? I don't understand this. I myself don't need any clothing. I'm going to go buy some tomorrow. I don't know. I can't resist a sale like this. How does this work? Can anyone explain retail to me? Buy your first suit and get the second one 50% off, the third one absolutely free, the third item in the store for nothing. Okay, I'll take that entire rack of coats in the entire. Give me all the overcoats. They all look good to me, all the candidates. Again, no answer. So he didn't ask the questions, which is very, very simple. If I were the moderator, I would have said, all right, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, here's the first question. We've done a poll, and most Americans are sick to their stomach about the flood of illegal immigrants who have eaten America alive. Yes, we all know most of them come here to use the social service system, but that some of them do work. Yes, we know that they're breeding children that we're going to have to take care of. Yes, we know that the anchor babies are a problem. So when you are president, what would you do to stem the tide of illegal aliens? Would you put the military on the border with Mexico or the National Guard? And that will be the first question. Let's hear what Perry said. Play it.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm a Christian. But you don't need to be in the pew every Sunday to know that there's something wrong in this country when gays can serve openly in the military, but our kids can't openly celebrate Christmas or pray in school. As president, I'll end Obama's war on religion. And I'll fight against liberal attacks on our religious heritage. Faith made America strong. It can make her strong again. I'm Rick Perry, and I approve this message.
Anyone have a problem with that one? I don't. Very nice. No one had dared say the word. So the next day, Obama puts on an overcoat, and they go to church. I think even he, so in other words, he inspired even Obama to stop watching football for a Sunday and go to church. They look beautiful. I'd love this picture of my living room of the family, the first family going to St. John's Church Sunday. That's very nice. Take that, ye governors alleging a war on religion, wrote somebody in the Dallas Morning News after reporting President Obama's remarks for the Christmas in Washington special at the White House. Gilman was referring to Texas Governor Rick Perry's recent campaign ad vowing to end Obama's war on religion. So the next day, Obama publicly attends church on Sunday and speaks about Christ's birth during a Christmas concert program. And Obama reminds everyone that the manifestation of God's love, Jesus Christ, was born more than 2,000 years ago. All of a sudden now, all of a sudden, I thought there was a separation of church and state. This is somewhat offensive to me, by the way. On the other hand, you know, it's one thing to support the five principal religions on earth, which I do, because I think that they can be a great stabilizing force in the societies that we all care about. That's number one. The five principal religions, as you well understand, are Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism, not in that particular order. Those are the five principal religions. There's the Zoroastrianism, then, of course, there's UFOism, and then there's the atheism, which is another religion. You don't understand it, but atheism is actually a religion of those who don't believe in anything but not believing. But if you don't believe in something, then that's your belief. You don't understand that. So they don't even understand they're in a logical trap. What's your belief? I don't believe in anything. So you believe in nothing, therefore you believe in something. So they don't understand that their actual fanaticism and not believing is a religion unto itself. And the only rules they say is everyone's wrong and they're right. But let's put that aside. It's not bad to see a president supporting, let's say, a belief in a greater... And you ask anyone who's had trouble with alcohol or drugs, as most people in the media have. I've never been in recovery, by the way. I never intend to go into recovery. I have no problem with anything. The only problem I have is with depression based upon the political class that's driving me crazy. Aside from that, I remember even 20 years ago, I was at a party where everyone was a reformed alcoholic. There was a Native American. There was a famous left-winger. They were all in recovery. I was having a vodka. I said, can I offer you a drink? He said, no, I don't drink. I'm in recovery. I said, a Native American in recovery? I said, that's sacrilegious. He got a big laugh out of that one. So did I. Just to show you that I know what I'm talking about. Anyway, listen to me. The fact of the matter is these are very trying times. That's all I can say to you. And I am for the perplexed, believe me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, watching the debates over the weekend, the Saturday night shootout, frankly, I was very impressed with all the candidates. I think any one of them would be a better president than Obama, In fact, I know that any one of the Republicans would make me feel safer than this questionable president we have. However, let's be clear. All of them being good Americans would be a better president, and most of them are far more conservative than anything we can expect in this country. That's absolutely true. Now let's go to michaelsavage.com. Savage predicted this. What did I predict? Well, I remember we had a fight last week on the show when Iran shot down our drone, or the drone was delivered to them by a spy in the Air Force, still to be determined. Right now, Iran is saying it can reverse engineer the downed U.S. drone, which is exactly what I said when a liar called the show and called me every name under the sun saying they could not be reverse engineered. I'm not an engineer, but I know common sense. I was right. Savage predicted this. Supreme Court will review Arizona immigration law, and one of the libs will recuse herself. She's out. Kagan. Talk about a failed department. Homeland Security fails to stop terrorists who just closed the Oakland port today in Oakland, California. They should have sent in Homeland Security police to arrest the occupied people who closed down the port, blocked trucks from entering a national security area. I ask you, do you feel confident under Janet Napolitano, who failed to stop domestic terrorists who closed down our ports? What is their mandate? Obama to slash National Guard force on border. You like that? Israel becomes hot topic at GOP debate. After Perry attack, Obama displays Christian faith, publicly attending church on Sunday with his wife and children. Romney says, Muslims I know are peace-loving and America-loving. I wonder where they live.
If these Republican lawmakers were truly concerned with fighting voter fraud, they would take on actual documented problems, such as distributing flyers with false information meant to trick voters, improperly purging voters, or tampering with election equipment and forms. Instead, they're pushing laws designed to change election outcomes by reducing voting, repressing turnout, and turning the clock back to the days of Jim Crow.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. UN agrees to climate cops. In Israel, Netanyahu says illegal immigration into Israel is a national calamity. Yeah, yes, I guess he knows what they're doing to him. Homeland Security is proposing an unmanned border entry from Mexico. Arab Spring leader among three women to win Nobel Prize, Peace Prize. What does that tell you? Noriega returns to Panama later. Here's a story for you to look at MichaelSavage.com. Eating packaged food makes men less attractive. That's right. There are certain chemicals in certain packaged foods that interfere with your hormones and make women sniff you and run away. So stop eating that canned food. Lying lawyer slapped for falsely accusing cop of anti-Semitic slurs. It's a sickening story. It's worth reading from the New York Post. I almost am reluctant to read it to you, but it makes me so sick and angry. You want to hear the story? An Orthodox Jewish lawyer, if you want to call him that, was driving at 84 miles an hour in a 55 in 2007. Unidentified state trooper pulls him over in New Jersey. 6 days after getting the ticket, this prize, Elliot Deer, sent a letter to the traffic court saying, this ticket shall be dismissed immediately since he wasn't speeding, quoting now. And this prejudice obviously was the cause for the ticket, the paper said. The lying lawyer's letter was forwarded to Internal Affairs, which contacted Deer, who repeated that he had been the victim of an ethnic slur. Unfortunately for this lying sack of garbage in a black frock, and luckily for the state trooper, the traffic stop had been videotaped on the officer's car camera, and the trooper was wearing a recording device. Police reported the lying lawyer's actions to the New York State Lawyers Disciplinary Committee. In a ruling made public, a panel of state appellate division judges denied the lying lawyer's request for a private rebuke and suspended the lying rat for 6 months. To me, that's not justice. To me, the justice would be him going to jail. He should receive a similar sentence that the trooper would have faced had it been true. He tried to destroy a, honest cop's reputation and career just to get out of a parking ticket. That's religion to you? That's religion to you? That's what his whole study of religion has brought it down to? He should not only be disbarred, he should also be thrown in prison, and the trooper should file a civil case against him. That's what should have happened. But you know there's no justice in the legal system. Anyway, this story is a big one. Thank God for the trooper. And you can read all about it on michaelsavage.com. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the bottom of my website. Al Sharpton banks dough from bankrupt nonprofit. No kidding. He's an honest man. Al Sharpton, honest. Murder conviction overturned after juror tweets about coffee. The man had been sentenced to death for the murder of a 17-year-old, but that didn't count. Sexual predator targets Jewish Orthodox boys. Ugh. There's an awful lot on my website, some of which I can't even read. It gets me so angry and so sick. All I can recommend is that you go to the website, check it out, because I really work hard at getting you all the stories that are worth reading, and then some. And you can catch them all at michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
Said the night wind to the little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
Way up in the sky, little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
A star dancing in the night with a tail as big as a kite.
I'm going to lighten things up a little bit because it gets too hot. We got to slow her down. We'll come back to very strong politics in a minute. But let me see if I can find... Here, I'm going to read your piece. Tel Aviv, Israel. My character, Jack Hatfield. Oh, am I giving something away? Uh-oh. Wait a minute. I don't know if I can give you... All right, I'll read you this paragraph. Tel Aviv, Israel. Way into the book, in the middle of it. Welcome to the city that never sleeps, the Reb said as they exited the highway. Traffic was light on the new express lane into Tel Aviv, and the drive-in from Ben-Gurion International Airport had taken them only 20 minutes. Rabbi Mel Nirsham had come in from San Francisco on an earlier flight to make the appropriate arrangements for Jack's arrival. Jack had known Nirsham for many years now. They'd met through a mutual acquaintance, Bill Hicks, a private detective. Hicks and Hatfield frequented the same restaurant, a place on Columbus, the North Beach restaurant, where they both liked to eat at the bar as they watched the crowd coming and going while they talk what they call the unholy trinity, sports and politics and religion. The city's ruling elite still ate there. Pelosi, Brown, the former mayor, all the known and hidden power brokers. One night, Hatfield brought up his disenchantment with the Catholic Church, echoing his father's own discontent, and complained that it had lost its edge and become too pacifist. No fire, no brimstone. If you're looking for fire and brimstone, Hicks said, you should check out my old friend, Rabbi Nirsham, toughest Jew I know. The more he heard about this rebellious Rebbe, hence the Reb, the more curious Jack got. Although he'd been raised Catholic, he'd always been attracted to his mother's history and culture. So a few days later, he set up a meet with Nirsham, discovered a kindred soul, and the two became instant friends. And when the Reb found out Hatfield had Jewish blood, he insisted Jack join him and his friends on Friday nights for prayer, vodka, and a home-cooked meal, an invitation Jack had accepted more than once. This is from Abuse of Power, page 169. Hicks had been right. Nirsham was a tough old Jew. The product of an Orthodox day school, the Reb had fallen out of love with Judaism in his late teens, and much to his parents' dismay, decided to rebel. He was a hippie in the 60s, later a boxer. Then in his middle years, he rediscovered his roots with a fierce passion and spent 5 years studying Jewish law at a rabbinical seminary in New York. This was followed by a year in Israel before returning to San Francisco as an ordained rabbi. The Reb was a black hat, a Chabad Lubavitch Hasid, who often spent weeks at a time in Tel Aviv. Jack himself hadn't been here in years. The first thing he noticed now was how much the place had grown. Comparisons to New York were no longer as laughable as they'd once been. Tel Aviv was a thriving metropolis perched on the edge of the Mediterranean. Everything about it screamed big city. So where are we headed, he asked the rabbi as they took the exit. First, we do something about those clothes. Jack was wearing jeans and a suede leather jacket. You want to blend in with us? You'll have to look the part. Hatfield had once asked him why Hasidic Jews always wore dark clothing, and Nirsham explained they were more concerned with what was on the inside rather than what was fashionable. In fact, these Hasids wore 19th-century Polish business garb. They were stuck in a fashion time warp. I'm not so sure about blending in, Jack said. If I dressed like you, I'd probably look more like Johnny Cash than Menachem Schneerson. The rabbi smiled, bring a guitar, you'll get all the girls. Anyway, I won't read you anymore because it starts to give away too much of the plot. It's, some of the lines are very funny, by the way. Let's see. All right, I'll read you a little bit more because it's fun. Page 171. I'm trying to skip plot elements so that you go out and you read the book yourself. Let's see. It hadn't taken much convincing to get the rabbi involved in Jack's plight. The Reb was rumored to have connections to both Mossad and the Israeli mafia. And while he wasn't a violent man, he'd never shied from a good fight. He was also known to quote Rabbi Meir Kahane, the founder of the Radical Jewish Defense League, who was assassinated in a Manhattan hotel room in 1990 by persons unknown. Every Jew, a 22, the Reb had said more than once. A staunch proponent of the Second Amendment, the Reb had always supported a well-armed citizenry, which he believed was the only way to keep another Castro or Stalin or Hitler or Chavez from rising in America. The one thing that stops an evil government from seizing total power, he once told Jack, is fear of millions of armed citizens. The Brits learned that lesson a couple of hundred years ago. Yet despite his tough talk, the Reb was genuinely a kind and friendly man. He acted as a missionary to fallen Jews he met in the streets of San Francisco, trying to bring them back to God. He'd saved many a drugged-out soul over the years, and they loved him for throwing them a spiritual life preserver when they were drowning. In some ways, Jack was in need of a life preserver himself, and once he told his story, the Reb was all too happy to help. Michael Savage, Abuse of Power, the finest novel written about San Francisco since Jack London, in my opinion. And it's in my humble opinion. I wouldn't say it if I actually didn't believe it. I mean, you think it's tongue-in-cheek, you're mistaken. My descriptions of San Francisco and of the Bay and of boating have never been surpassed by anybody that I know of, or I wouldn't have written the book. I guarantee it. Call me at 1-800-449-8255. Albany, New York, on another question. Joe, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. How are you tonight?
Go on. What's your main point?
Hello?
Yeah, Joe, what's your main point?
I just wanted to say I'm a new listener. I've been listening to you for 5 months, and me and my girlfriend, we get nervous when we don't hear you. You know, we were kind of worried last week because you didn't come on, you know, but we listened.
Yeah, I had some issues. I had to go to the, you know, this and that. People have doctor issues, whatever. So I'm in good shape right now and trying to keep myself focused and calm. I know I become a big part of a lot of Americans' lives, and I know a lot of people listen to me. I was in a supermarket yesterday, and a man who teaches in dental school said to me, Michael, is that you? Is that Teddy? I said, yes. He said, you have no idea how popular you are on the campus of, and I won't name the university. He said, we all listen to you. He said, all of the professors stop what they're doing and turn the radio on when you come on the air. You have become our voice on the radio. I know that, Joe. I have a big, big group I should supply the other day. You know how I relax sometimes? You wouldn't believe it. I go into, like, Orchard Supply Hardware. They don't even advertise. They should. First of all, I like their train calendars. That's number one. You know how relaxing it is for me to walk in an American supermarket and see the bounty on all the shelves, the great selection of foods? And I realize, as someone who understands business, what it takes to grow the food, to raise the animal, to grow the fruit, to harvest the fruit or the animal, to package it, to preserve it, to ship it, to market it. It's astounding to understand how complicated our food distribution system really is. And I marvel at it. The same way when I go into a store like OSH, I look at the hammers and the nails and the screwdrivers and the wrenches and the drills and the mops and the brooms and the light bulbs, and they're all there. If I need a screw, I can get the exact screw. And I marvel at the capitalist system that permits people to invest in making so much as a humble nut or a screw and to bring it to market, and I could buy it for 4 cents. It's astounding to me how this all works. And I can guarantee you, if you ask any of the vermin in the gutters of America saying Occupy Wall Street, if they even understood one iota of what it means to raise a plum and bring it to market, or to manufacture a widget and to bring it to market, they wouldn't have the slightest idea. But they all know the rhetoric. We're Wall Street millionaires. And Wall Street millionaires. And Wall Street bring down their banks. They're schmucks. That's what they learn. That's what they learned. The schmucks went to college for 4 years. Look what they came out. Look what they know. They know absolutely nothing. The reason they're unemployed is because they're not fit for anything. That's my humble opinion. And let me tell you something else. If you think it was easy for me to get where I am, you're mistaken. I have been told not to apply for jobs because I was a white male. Now, I could have given up. I could have joined some radical group. I could have become another malcontent walking around with a hatred for everybody. But I didn't. I had to go out and I had to get reeducated. I had to learn a new profession, a new career. And I had to walk on glass. I had to swim through fire to get where I am. But guess what? If you have the will, plenty of work in this country. You can find plenty of opportunity in this country. You can find plenty of ways to make a living in this country. If only you'd stop blaming others. Unfortunately, we have a blamer-in-chief in the White House. A lazy president who got where he is through favors and through favoritism. And whenever things go wrong, he points his finger and he blames everybody but himself. And then he goes on either a golfing trip or on another vacation. This is not a very inspiring president. This is the most dividing president in American history, which is why you have these malcontents in the gutters of America. Make no mistake about it. They do not have a valid message whatsoever. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Right now, the Middle East is in chaos. And we can thank Mr. Obama for this, because he encouraged and the State Department paid for the so-called Arab winter. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation from Israel to talk about the nightmare in the Middle East is Frank Romano, a reporter, and a man who was once kidnapped by Muslim radicals. Frank Romano, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael, for having me on. It's a great pleasure to be speaking with you again.
What are things like now on the street in Israel?
Well, Michael, things are tense. So there's a great deal of turbulence here. But it seems like every time I come here, there's more conflict. And the politicians have not succeeded on either side. And I think there are just too many obstacles right now. So it's very tense, and it's revving up. And I believe this spring, things are coming to a head in Palestine and in Israel.
How is Iran changing the Middle East situation?
Yes, Iran, you know, things started, among other things, through Syria, of course, had been aiding the Hezbollah, which was in confrontation with the State of Israel. And of course, they've had their hands all throughout the Middle East, including in Palestine, when Hamas gained power here not too long ago. In the West Bank, when it won the elections and the prime minister was a Hamas representative, and a lot of their funds were cut off, Iran jumped in. And, of course, it's money with strings attached. And now when we switch to what is happening in the nuclear area, it's still not clear as to what threat they pose, which adds another card to the deck. It's unbalanced. It's really creating a situation where we're not in equilibrium here, and they're revving things up on their end. They've got manifestations happening in Iran as well, but again, it's made a staunch ally of Syria. And we know what's happening in Syria with the protests and so forth. There's been a great deal of brutal reaction by the state of Syria. And Iran has been steadfast in their support for Syria. So it's really creating an unbalanced situation here. And it's also, what I think is hopefully is not providing a pretext, however, for perhaps retaliation by the State of Israel and with the help of the U.S., that is to say, with respect to their nuclear project. And the retaliation, of course, it might be, without knowing everything, we should know about Iran, and hopefully our political leaders don't take advantage of it to unfocus our situation on other issues and focus on Iran, and almost have a similar type of situation to what happened in Iraq, where the invasion went through, even without complete investigation. I'm not totally against it, but it was discovered that there were no serious arms that we're all talking about, and germ warfare was not being engaged in by Saddam Hussein, arms of mass destruction.
The Iran factor, though, could screw us all out of whack, especially with the new nuclear threat.
You were once kidnapped by Muslim radicals. Well, what was that all about? How did it occur, and how did you escape?
That was on my way to the Middle East, and I was studying in at the Sorbonne at the University in Paris, and thought I'd travel to the Middle East. I took a train, and then got down to Spain, took a ferry across, got into Morocco, was invited by an imam who seemed pretty harmless, with this white turban and white robe, and invited me into the mosque, learn about Islam and Arabic. Well, I was in Casablanca, Morocco, except this was the wrong mosque. This place, it was a place that harbored and trained an extremist group. Of all places, I never expected to. These places weren't on my radar. This was in 1978, and all they wanted to talk to me about was jihad and saving my soul first, and then once I were righteously converted, which is what they intended to do, and they made no qualms about it. They didn't hide their purpose. They wanted me to help recruit for them. I built a relationship with the guards, and I distracted them. When I had a shot to get out, and I took it, and I hid in the fields around, and it was nighttime. Fortunately, they couldn't see me very well, but they were following me. They're chasing me, in fact, and I could feel them. I could hear them, and I could hear them take off on their motorcycles around and cars, and I was in this field, hiding, and I cut my feet because I didn't have any shoes, and I finally got the middle of Casablanca. The story wasn't over yet. I had to hide. I was desperate to hide. I found a family, to the detriment of their own security, hid me until I could flee the country.
Well, how do you think the U.S. presidential situation is playing into this story in the Middle East?
It has a direct impact on what is happening here. I truly can't ignore it, and it's definitely it has an impact here. The American political situation, notably the presidential race, I believe, for instance, President Obama's speech before the UN, which was a very compromising speech. Negotiations so far led by politicians such as President Obama and Netanyahu are not getting anywhere. And then we have Gingrich coming out stating that the Palestinians have no right even to be here. And I think we need to get back and work with individuals such as people here and work toward peace and enlighten ourselves and keep working toward it. Because I don't think we can depend upon the politicians on either side, or from the State of Israel, or even Palestinian politicians, to find a durable peace here.
Where can we read more?
Yes, you can find my book everywhere, and I invite people to access my website, which is www.frankromano, FRANKROM as in Mary, AN as in Nancy, O-LT.com. And there I'll talk about the dialogue I've engaged in. And I'm not favoring either side here. I'm working with both sides, Israelis, Palestinians. And you'll see the challenges of going into the West Bank and into Israel. And sometimes we've been spat upon, but we're still working toward peace.
Frank Romano, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Great interview. Thank you so much. Appreciate your interest. And thank you for having me on.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and prayers.
You know, there's a Highway 80 in California that runs up from San Francisco, actually the East Bay, right up through the mountains, Tahoe. You go up the over, great, 9,000 feet. I don't even know. I forgot already. Emigrant Gap, whatever the height is. It's amazing, majestic, granite cliffs, whatever. But when you're coming down from the mountains in California, like the Tahoe region down into San Francisco, and you descend, from 8,000, 7,000, 6,000, 5,000 feet. There are signs along the side of the road for trucks that says slow or down. Then they got gravel beds on the side of the road in case the trucks become a runaway truck where they're supposed to pull it off into the side into a bed of gravel. Okay, I'm just going 120 miles an hour down a hill just now, and I got to now slow her down. You know what I mean? I don't want to burn so hot that I just burn myself out on a Monday. It's a long day's journey into night A, and it's a longer day's journey into Friday B, and it's a long 2 years I've been fighting England. 2 years I've been fighting England, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You think this hasn't taken a toll on me? This is one man. But I'm going to tell you something else. I'm not here to complain to you. I'm here to tell you something, and this is very important for you to know. America loves an underdog. And the way the enemies of the truth work is they try to take an underdog like me and make me into something that I'm not. They make it sound as though I have the power when I have no power at all. All I've got is my brains and my ability to express my ideas on this radio show. I have nothing else. That's not power. Power is controlling NBC and MSNBC and getting inside deals from the Cornhusker for the Cornhusker. The Cornhusker has got power. Anyone who can make $300 million overnight, he has power. Anyone who can bust out the housing market and make $10 billion and then try to bring down the U.S. military's GPS system, that's a man with power. That's power, not me. But America's always loved the underdog. Make no mistake about it, I'm the underdog. I have no power other than the truth. And the Bible says, and the truth shall set you free. I'm not so sure about that. There's a lot of slip trenches around the world with people who've told the truth who you never heard of. Okay, so let's not get carried away with absurdity. The fact of the matter is it's very dangerous to tell the truth. There's no percentage in telling the truth for most people. That's why most people don't tell it and why most people continue to lie. But I'm too deep into this game to pull out of it at this point. I got to tell you right now. I mean, many days I think to myself, you know what, Mike, back off. You've gone pretty far. You've done pretty good. You know, you're a certain age. I mean, how much more time do you have left on earth to begin with? And B, what do you need the headache for, which you keep bringing these things up for? You're only going to make more enemies than you already have. And then I say to myself, well, look, I'm on the radio. The purpose of the radio is very interesting. Talk radio is supposed to be an entertainment medium. Make no mistake about it. The people can only handle so much scandal. And then they turn it off. They want to hear music or whatever. They want news. They'll go to like light news, like the Muzak of news, which is NPR. NPR is the Muzak of the news business. They give you the light version, and it's all slanted towards the Mantovani view of news. You know what I'm saying? It's not Mozart. It's not Beethoven. It's like a Mantovani music in terms of left-wing light, the light opera of NPR. But if you want to write the heavy-duty operas of the truth, you're going to do so at great expense. And to make the long story short, in other words, if you get up and to do talk radio, do it or don't do it. That's what I say to myself every day. Get up and, you know, run that mile. Do the best you can. Try to tell the truth without going over the line. Okay? And that's the end of it. What more can you do? There's nothing more you could do. The game isn't over yet. We don't know whether Obama will survive the scandals. The chances are, with the help from the media and the fact that he has a complicit attorney general who we put in office there, and there's no independent, what do you call them when they're like Watergate, they had a special investigator, a special counsel, right, whatever they used to call them. But there should be one for Solargate right now. At the same time, there should be one on the Light Squared Gate, which we're calling Wiregate or Lightgate, because these are big stories in our time. These are worthy of a novel unto themselves, how an administration could get away with scandals of this magnitude. Even the hint of scandal is a scandal. And nothing happens. Nobody is indicted. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody loses a nickel. Instead, they go on to trivia in the media. Who shot who? Which slut sleeping with which warlock in Hollywood? So what you do is you throw yourself into your work. And I have, you know, relaxing. Like yesterday, I was out on my boat. I'm gonna drift now because I got to slow her down. So it's supposed to be, you know, I had cool weather out here, cold weather till last Tuesday. I went yet. I said, "You have anything for fall?" He says, "Well, I got this. So I bought like nice flannel shirts that smelled of. They take up the perfume flannel, which I can't stand. The smell of the cologne in the store suffuses every piece of clothing. You could puke from it." I have to hang my clothing up when I buy it from like a chain store in a garage for 3 months to, like, detox it before I could put it in my body. Are my eyes smart? You talk about a toxic environment. So, I bought some flannel shirts Tuesday, getting ready for cold. I was sleeping with three blankets. Bingo, I wake up on Wednesday. It's like a swelter job. Oh, and people love this weather. I could do without it, frankly. It's not what I moved to the Bay Area for. I moved there for fog and the Chinese food. So let me go backwards. I'm enjoying this for a minute. Let me roll the clock back. Friday after the show, yours truly, your favorite talk show host, Michael Savage, closed off his microphone, turned it off, went down out of the studio, went into the streets of San Francisco, and he did what he loves best. My greatest pleasure in life, or amongst the greatest pleasures, is actually walking through a city that I know very well and that I love very well. That happens to be San Francisco with all of its warts, right? So I go way up California Street. My goal was to make it to the top of the hill to the Fairmont Hotel and then turn back down the hill to North Beach through Chinatown. On the way, I got distracted. I stopped in a bar that had loud, beautiful polka music. I went in there for a few minutes. The owner said, "You want a beer?" "No, not drinking. I intend to walk the hill," blah, blah, blah. The next stop, as I'm walking past Chinatown, I see St. Mary's Cathedral. I had never been in this church, but I love architecture, and I love the sanctity of churches, even though I'm not a religious man. I go in, and there was a Chinese pastor with a small group, and they were just chatting about something religious. I saw it was like a meeting of some kind, because it's right in the heart of Chinatown. It's one of the oldest cathedrals in the city. Gorgeous. Incredible architecture. Gothic ceilings. Lifts your spirit. And then I see at the back of the thing, they have to, like, reinforce the building or the city's going to knock it down. But if it was a bathhouse, I can guarantee it could be masonry without reinforcement, because that would be a city structure that the city under Nancy Pelosi would consider to be a sacred building. So then I walk further, and I hear a band in the streets in Chinatown. The squeaky, squealy, plaintive music of Chinatown's band. And it's a bunch of kids playing sort of like Chinese instruments, but they're playing American songs, including the Marine Corps hymn. So what the heck is this? I'm enjoying. I go over there, and it's a kung fu studio celebrating something in Chinatown. And I tell you something. I saw what I always see when I walk through Chinatown. I saw the future of America. And it's actually a beautiful future, which is you got to love the Chinese community. You got to see how incredibly tight-knit this community is. These children were playing instruments. They weren't gangbanging. I would say one out of four children I saw going by in the streets had a violin in her hand with a grandparent walking beside her. I said, now this is what you call a community. And I saw people who knew each other in the streets saying hello and waving to each other. Okay, so I continue my walk up the hill. I go all the way up, go into the Fairmont, stop in a plush seat, make a few phone calls, zip down, hit where I knew I was going to end up, even though I didn't want to. I said, don't wind up there because you're going to wind up having a drink, which you don't want. I went to the North Beach restaurant. Sure enough, my friend Lorenzo was there, and I wound up having a drink, which I didn't want. But after one, I wanted two, and that was the end of that. So then a couple of young people were in there from Staten Island, Italian people. They came to the restaurant because they knew I come by there once in a while. And we chatted, you know, about Italian food and this and that, blah, 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 blah. Then the weekend goes on. So yesterday I go out on my boat. Gorgeous, flat. This time of year, the water turns what I call China blue. Now, I don't like the hot weather, but I take advantage of it because I go out boating. On this bay, there are two little islands that very few people know about. They're called East Brother Island, and there's a lighthouse on it. On East Brother Island, there's a lighthouse on the other side of the Richmond Bridge. And there is a Victorian-era bed and breakfast inn. This used to be manned by a family. But it's now a bed and breakfast with a Victorian building on it. You could Google it, East Brother Island Lighthouse. And it's on a piece of a peninsula that I know very well because I boated past it 1,000 times. And if you look at the wooden structures that are crumbling, they look familiar to you because they were in all in the Dirty Harry movies, the last scenes where Clint Eastwood chases down the villain. It's along that piece of land. But what few people don't know is on the other side of that peninsula is the last American whaling station, which was closed down, I believe, as recently as 1968. They were still hauling in whale carcasses and cutting them up right over here in the San Francisco Bay. Now, the reason I mention all of this is because this piece of the bay, including some other aspects of the Bay. Very few people know as well as I do, as a boater who knows these nooks and crannies. I made these islands, the East Brother Island, a signature a scene in Abuse of Power. I cannot wait to see the movie. In fact, I know exactly how the movie's going to open. Do you remember the movie To Live and Die in L.A.? Remember the power of that film? I'm going to get into like a movie now already. Remember the movie To Live and Die in L.A., that powerful music of To Live and Die in L.A.? There was a certain energy to it, and it opened up with the like refineries and the industrial part of L.A. that very few people know exists. I see the opening shot with titles from the other side of the Richmond Bay Bridge looking towards San Francisco, which is 10 miles away, from the island, from the lighthouse, looking through under the bridge on a perfect day with the silhouette of San Francisco in the background, because that's where Jack Hatfield is taken with Sarah to be tortured to death.